WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. Tropical storm Idalia has moved off the shore of the Carolinas and into the Atlantic, leaving behind a trail of heavy destruction and flooding. Correspondent Omar Villafranca begins team coverage from Florida's Big Bend area.
I'm an eighth generation Floridian. I've been here 62 years. This is as bad as I've seen it.
Crystal River resident Philip Henley told us he was among the last to leave his neighborhood as the floodwaters rose.
One guy said that they was swimming out the window, so that tells me it's up over the window.
I'm Jim Crisula in North Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. There has been major tidal flooding in downtown Charleston, and numerous flood warnings are posted in North Carolina east of I-95. There has been property damage from suspected tornadoes in several areas. There are widespread power outages. No deaths or serious injuries have been reported from the storm in the Carolinas.
At least three deaths are blamed on the storm, the latest in Georgia. In other parts of the country, people are gassing up for Labor Day weekend getaways. CBS's Haley Ott.
Fuel analyst Patrick DeHaan says with summer coming to a close, prices should start dropping after Labor Day, barring any surprises.
I do think that the trend will remain downward for potentially the next few weeks, especially as we get into mid and late September. That's when a combination of the transition back to cheaper winter gasoline and falling gasoline demand should pave the way for lower prices.
The national average for a gallon of regular today is $3.82. We're learning more about the building fire in South Africa today that's killed more than 73 people. The BBC's Pumza Filani has details from Johannesburg.
It's a building that was condemned by its owners and declared unsafe. But what has subsequently happened is that it's understood it was taken over by so-called property cartels that are said to be operating in the city center, and they've been then renting it out to scores of people per room, charging sometimes exorbitant amounts for a very small size room.
At least seven children are among the victims. Now to what's hot in the car department.
Dodge Challengers and Chargers have always been targets of car thieves, but Matt Moore of the Highway Loss Data Institute says a powerful Challenger Hellcat is now 60 times more likely to be stolen than an average vehicle.
It's highly likely that those vehicles are desirable and being stolen by professionals.
Four Kias have now joined the theft risk list. EVs are the least likely to be stolen. Jeff Gilbert, CBS News, Detroit.
The Dow is up 119 points. S&P ahead 13. This is CBS News.
You need to hire fast and hire right? You need Indeed. Their all-in-one hiring platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Finding great candidates.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. On Tuesday afternoon, the Wisconsin State Patrol responded to a two-vehicle crash on State Highway 35 near Osceola. The collision occurred between a motorcyclist and a 73-year-old in a Dodge Ram. Reportedly, the Dodge Ram pulled out from a farm address onto State Highway 35 where the motorcyclist was traveling. The operator of the motorcycle was flown to Regions Hospital with life-threatening injuries, and both the north and southbound lanes were shut down as a result of the crash. On Wednesday, Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers visited Renz Health and Rehab Center in Appleton, taking the opportunity to highlight how the center had benefited from state training programs. Renz Health and Rehab Center has reportedly trained over 150 certified nursing assistants through the program. Governor Evers also highlighted part of his $1 billion budget request, sharing that $6 million of the proposed funding would go towards the WIS caregiver careers. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
Bug Tussle, providing high-speed internet to rural Wisconsin. No data caps, no contracts. 877-227-0924. Call today to learn how you can get 3 months free. 877-227-0924.
Bandana, check. Boots, check. Gloves, check. As a motorcycle rider in Wisconsin, you may go to great lengths to protect your image. Just be sure you're protecting yourself, too.
Wear a Department of Transportation-approved helmet. Perform safety checks on your motorcycle. Know the traffic laws and don't take risks. Motorists and motorcyclists can work together to achieve zero preventable deaths on Wisconsin roads. Zero in Wisconsin. Together, we can save lives. Learn more at zeroinwisconsin.gov.
Sponsored by Wisconsin DOT.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
93.5, The Tap.
Innovative.
Innovative?
Innovative. Whatever. You can say it both ways. A friend wouldn't make fun of somebody like for knowing a word. See, this is what I'm talking about, people. Kristen Bride does not believe in friendship. I don't allow them to compliment me back because I can't take a compliment.
I like your beard.
Shut up. I'm leaving right now.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
So, apparently, I don't know how far and wide this is celebrated, but apparently, today is National Supper Club Day. Is there more? This may be a more, is this even more of a Wisconsin holiday than, or national observance than like all the different cheese and beer days? Because I think it's more unique. It's still more unique here. Wisconsin supper clubs, I don't, like, there's not, it's still Midwest, but I feel like, I don't know if it's as dominant anywhere else than it is in Wisconsin.
I think that, like, I don't know, honestly, because it's funny because for me, like, supper clubs were supper clubs, so... The fact that it's like when people say, what's a fish fry? I'm like, what do you mean? What's a fish fry?
But that's a good question. So like you just defined a supper club by calling it a supper club. So what is a supper club?
To me, a supper club is a, it's a fancy restaurant, but it's not like a Michelin star restaurant. It looks like a fancy restaurant built by your grandparents.
It's what they think is fancy.
Yes. There's carpeting on the walls. You dress up.
But Wisconsin dress up.
But yes. And yeah, like it just feels like we're making fun of ourselves. But I feel like a supper club, literally, like we're going to the supper club tonight and everyone will go, oh, which one? You know, like, and you know, it's going to be a fancy night out, but it's going to be Midwest fancy.
And that's what I mean. It's Midwest fancy.
Yeah.
But I also think that there's a range now. Like I was reading an article about there was a documentary about Wisconsin supper clubs, and the interview was talking about how it started, and you know, at one point she was saying that the whole experience was supposed to be, nothing was rushed.
Yeah.
Like the whole evening could be spent. You start at the bar. Once you're ready to move to the table, you can move to the table, and there's already the relish tray there. And once you're done, you can move back to the bar, and it's you hang out. And there used to be entertainment, but now there's not as much live music and live entertainment anymore. But I feel like a lot, especially popular supper clubs, once your table's up, you're going. Like, because it's a like long way. Like popular supper clubs, like it's like a 2-hour wait.
Yeah.
And people will wait for it, especially on a Friday for a fish fry.
See, that's the thing for me is I don't want to go to a supper club that's new. I want to go to a supper club that's old. Because to me, anything that's like 20 years or younger, they're just hopping the bandwagon of the look. But you want to go to a great one, the one I always want to go to, like I haven't gone in so long, but it's one I think about on a fairly regular basis, is the Hobnob in Kenosha.
I've not been there.
It is beautiful. There is a oil painting of the owners on the wall. They have a, when I went last, they had a live jazz trio and it was amazing. And it overlooks the lake.
So is it beautiful or is it kitschy beautiful?
It's beautiful because, so it's beautiful to me because anything that's like newer is kitschy. Kitschy is like, to me, like there's no irony in the design. They didn't say, well, we have to do this because this is what a supper club is. They were the ones who, they're the design that everyone wants to be. You know what I mean? Like, they're the originals, okay, in my opinion. So it's beautiful. Whereas you go to one that's like, oh, they opened a new supper club. I'm like, well, that's kitschy then, because they knew they had to put a deer head on the wall and they knew they had to dress up all their wait staff in tuxedos and things like that, because that's the old way of doing it. Whereas the Hobnob, which has a very long history, like mobsters went there, Al Capone went there. It's beautiful.
That's funny that that's your definition of kitschy. It has to, it's like something that is like put on, because when we were up in Hayward, there was, this was in July during the Lumberjack championships.
Yeah.
There is a bar, I think, and now I'm trying to look up the name really quickly, but it is like every single wall is taxidermy.
Yeah.
And it's not ironic, right? Yeah. Like, this is how this bar has always looked, but I still consider that kitschy.
Yeah, I guess to me, kitschy is a style that's, yeah. If it's your style, like if it's like, I shot all these animals, this is what me and my grandfather did when I was younger. I don't know why kitschy almost seems, it's, I don't know. I'm using it wrong. I know I am. And I know that kitschy is the way to describe it. But to me, that's not fair, because it almost seems like it's being done for the sake of it to look like it's like, mm-hmm, when you go to these, what a small tangent, when you go to like some of these newer barber shops that are trying so hard to look like an old barber shop, but it's still a $60 haircut. But yeah, you're like, but we have like deer heads on the wall. I'm like, this is fine. I'm just going to go to the place down the street where the guy barely remembers my name and he can cut my hair. That's fine. You know, I got opinions, old man opinions with Greg.
All right. Well, we're going to keep this question going throughout today's show. What is your favorite supper club? And also, what makes a supper club versus a different type of restaurant? What is the criteria to you, to besides them just calling themselves a supper club? Because yeah, it is National Supper Club Day. But moving on, at least for now, separate question. Should private schools that are receiving taxpayer money, should their finances be public? 844-967-2789. I feel like this should be obvious.
Yeah.
And say yes. And I don't know why anyone would say no, but Wisconsin private schools are objecting to their finances being made public. And I read both WPR, Wisconsin Public Radio's written two articles about this, basically back to back, one on Tuesday and one yesterday. And I can't really understand why there's objections, because School Choice Wisconsin and Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty say an online dashboard to display public school finances is necessary for transparency. But those same groups are now fighting against the inclusion of data from voucher schools.
Oh, I wonder why.
But honestly, why? 844-967-2789. Because at least in the article, it doesn't necessarily say, like the only kind of, at least and I'm missing something, the only thing that they report on is saying like, well, that information already is available. But so then why don't you just want to include it on a dashboard that makes it accessible and easier to read for people? I literally am asking this question. I don't know if anyone knows.
The thing is I feel like we've talked about this before with regard to the fact that when these private schools take public school money, they get the money and they don't have to show results for them. Like, they can take kids in and then throw them out and keep the money and use reasons, whether it's queer issues, whether it's quote unquote trouble issues. So I feel like there's just, I feel like the reason why they don't want to have this money or these records being shown is because they have to go deep into the minutiae of why their, maybe their student population doesn't reflect the money they're getting, or, you know, I just, it's an investigation and they just want the money and leave them alone. That's it.
Well, and I just don't understand how you can justify that as far as like, cause I mean, we're also working at the first, for the first time, like, this new school year and the budget that has been increased significantly for choice programs, for private schools receiving public money. And so there is a lot more money going to private schools now. So funding for kindergarten through eighth grade, private choice schools increased from about $8,400 per student to $9,500 per student. And funding for private choice high schools went from $9,045 to $12,000 per student. And so, and that is across about 86,000 students who are receiving vouchers. So, like, this is a huge jump in how much money we're spending on those schools. And so the idea that we want, like, I just, it's the hypocrisy of, oh yeah, public schools need transparency. We want to know, we're pushing for have this dashboard that, you know, there was a bipartisan bill that behind it, but no, we don't, but these schools are different. Even though they're receiving public money, their finances are their business. And I just don't know, even if you're a school choice proponent, how you justify that. 844-967-2789. And I don't like it, I don't have any opinion beyond, like, it just seems like you're either hiding something, and it sounds like that's super, I think that's super nefarious, at least what you pointed out, and I'm not accusing them of that, but like, is that why it's like you don't want to be held accountable for the money you take for students that don't end up graduating from your programs? I don't know, because at least on the data that they provide, they try to say that they, being Wisconsin school choice programs, that they're more cost effective. So on Wednesday, School Choice Wisconsin released its own data showing private schools in the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program, Racine Parental Choice Program, and statewide Wisconsin Parental Choice Program were more, quote, cost effective than public school peers. And so the group used DPI school report card to show that the school choice programs had better results to come to their conclusion. But then DPI responded by basically saying that this is a flawed narrative and that it was ironic that the group promoting the idea of cost effectiveness while maintaining there is no need to include their financial data in the portal, all while private schools accepting voucher money, like you said, Greg, are still allowed to discriminate with, against students with disabilities and LGBTQ plus students. So I don't know. I mean, tell me I'm wrong that, like, there's a good reason why private schools shouldn't have to report or have their information included on this dashboard when they're receiving public money. 844-967-2789. We'll keep this conversation going. And then later in the hour, we have the good, the bad, and the, once again, I'm telling you, please do not sleep on women's sports. It's a long one. At the end of the hour, we will play Three Truths and a Lie. So Greg, get ready for that. And then in the next hour, Kristen Lierley is back after a week last week when she was at surgery, being a doctor. She's back to for a public service announcement. And Paul Noonan is here next hour. So we got a jam-packed show. Stay tuned. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Rock and roll. Feeling is there, body and soul.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up.
Teachers learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. This includes a commitment to news. Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station.
With weather, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, nothing but sunshine, 79. Tonight, mostly clear, lows around 57. And a big warm-up starts tomorrow. We'll see a high near 87 degrees. For Saturday, 91, 99, and hot for your Sunday. Highs near 98 on Labor Day with nothing but sunshine.
Currently, 66 degrees.
Civic Media radio stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
Wisconsin. I'm Kristen Bright. Greg Bach is on the board, and it is National Supper Club Day. So throughout the day, we are asking you, what makes a supper club, in your opinion? And what is your favorite supper club? Depending, you know, this is a statewide show with people listening all across Wisconsin. So today is a time for you to shout out your local favorite and why. 844-967-2789. We will sprinkle that throughout the day. Did anyone chime in on that yet?
Yeah, they said that it was a place called The Bear in Manitowish Waters, but I'm not sure if that's The Bear or The Bear Trap Inn.
Oh.
But I honestly feel like the show should send me on a fact-finding mission to just... Chris, don't laugh.
No.
Don't laugh. This is important work.
Okay.
We are journalists. Are we? No, we're
are
not.
Are we?
No, we're not. I just want to eat. But I just think that'd be really fun to do a show from a supper club. Oh, my gosh. Get dressed up. Oh, my gosh.
What is your typical go-to order? Are you usually going to do fish or steak? Or
I do steak, which I'm not a steak guy. But for some reason, when I'm in that environment, I'm like, yes.
I want to be rolled home.
And the thing about the Hobnob, I'm going to keep talking about this place. The thing about the Hobnob is, at least when I went last time, I ordered a side of asparagus. It was literally a bunch of like what you get.
Like family style?
Yeah, exactly. They should have said, like, this is for like three people, but it just put it down covered in butter, like 30 pieces of asparagus. I'm like, I don't care if that's $40. I'm eating it all.
Did you?
Yes.
Great. Congratulations.
Yes.
Tony weighed in on the YouTube live stream. You can always watch us along with listen to us on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter at As Goes Wisconsin. Go ahead and follow or subscribe, either one, once you're there. But Tony said, being from Ohio, we have zero supper clubs. I had to find out about them after moving to Wisconsin. So at least that's one Midwest state that we can... at least in his opinion, does not have them. So I don't know, in like our neighbors, like does the UP have them? Does Minnesota have them? Someone let me know. But throughout the day, we are taking your texts and calls about what makes a supper club a supper club and what What is like your favorite supper club or favorite supper club item? 844-967-2789. But we were also going to round out our conversation about, do we have a call on supper clubs first? Because I wanted to just wrap up the conversation about private
Let's wrap
schools.
Up the private thing.
All right. So we're
David, hold on. David,
school.
Hold on. We'll get you in a moment.
So yeah, I don't know where this is going. I would assume that there's a, like the Joint Finance Committee with the private schools objecting to their finances being made public will provide these groups cover and say if they don't want to be included, they won't have to be included because God knows the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty and the Republicans in the legislature are bedfellows, to put it lightly. And so I don't know how much teeth there is going to be as far as DPI continuing to push that the schools who are receiving public money should be included in this dashboard. But I think it's just a question that people should be aware of is that what is the accountability? Like, what is the accountability? And I'm going to get to this when we get to the good, bad, and the, once again, I'm telling you not to sleep on women's sports section in the next segment. But, you know, we talk about returning the taxpayer, like the money to taxpayers and what taxpayers are spending their money on and people, you know, what people get upset about as far as those are taxpayer dollars all the time. But like these are taxpayer dollars. Don't you want to have some kind of access to understanding how they're being used once they get funneled to private schools? Or like we're going to tease for the next segment, if they're being used for lawsuits that you don't support. And or Gableman investigations that you don't support. And again, the accountability of who's making the choices of how this money is getting spent then reverts back to making sure that you vote in every single election. And so I think we had one text on this from the 262. I would like to know, besides the military, what other money spent by taxpayers has no accountability to taxpayers? Is there precedent? Probably.
I mean, I guess if, yeah, military and all defense slash covert, all that stuff is improper. But yeah, school money definitely should be. I mean, it's school money.
But as far as his question is, like, is there precedent for like other programs?
I don't think for school money. I think maybe if it has to do with defense or safety, but this has nothing to do with either. This is why am I paying money for a voucher system? And two, where does that money go to? I have every right to know.
Well, I mean, and I guess it depends on what you mean by no accountability. Because I would, like, speaking of the Gableman investigation, I don't know if there was any accountability there. Like, we now know that, like, it was being spent and what, like, it was public knowledge. But as far as, like, hey, we don't want you to do that. Can you stop? We didn't really have a lot of say in that. But all right, let's go back to David before we end this segment to hear his thoughts on supper clubs.
David, what say you about supper clubs?
So I actually have been a hot knob in Racine, and I think it's very good. It's got a tremendous view of Lake Michigan. But I would suggest my favorite, personal favorite in the state is Schwartz's Supper Club. It's in New Holstein. It's a little bit north of Elkhart Lake, and it is definitely top drawer as far as the food that they serve. They got purveyors, local purveyors that they use, and everything is essentially, you know, it's completely, you know, done there at the restaurant.
And you say the name one more time, David? Schwartz's?
Yeah, Schwartz's Supper Club.
Schwartz's Supper Club. All right, we'll add it to the list. Thank you for the suggestion, David. Thanks for your call. All right, when we come back, we will get through some headlines, and then we're going to play three headlines and a lie. I'm excited to see.
Civic Media Radio Stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
CBS News Brief. The remnants of Tropical Storm Idalia unleashed heavy rain and flash flooding across eastern North Carolina before moving out to sea, and they're still smarting in western Florida. This mother and daughter lost their home in Horseshoe Beach.
It's just material stuff.
I know. It's just our retirement, our own life.
It's material. We're going to rebuild.
23 years.
The
It's going to be fun.
Lots of Americans getting ready to fill up their tanks and hit the road. Gas Buddy's Patrick DeHaan.
Labor Day this year is likely to be virtually identical to what motors were paying last year.
Average price for regular today, $3.82 a gallon. More than 73 people, mostly migrants renting spaces from a criminal gang, have died in a building fire in Johannesburg. South Africa's president, Cyril Ramaphosa.
It's just material stuff.
And he says that he hopes that through investigations, nothing like this will be allowed to happen again. CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. According to a report from Forward Analytics, the leading cause of death for Wisconsinites between the ages of 25 and 54 is now fentanyl. The report states that in 2020, fentanyl-related deaths outpaced the second leading cause of death, car accidents, by over 2.5 times. Health officials say the COVID-19 pandemic accelerated the opioid epidemic and are calling on governments, schools, health organizations, and law enforcement to help curb the epidemic. Under a new proposal from President Joe Biden's administration and the United States Department of Labor, a large number of Wisconsin workers would be guaranteed overtime pay. The proposal would mandate overtime pay for most salaried employees making under $55,000 per year. The average salary in Wisconsin is roughly $50,000 currently. Experts believe this plan is similar to an Obama administration plan and could get shut down by federal courts. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Jerry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude. Did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us. Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
As Goes Wisconsin. I'm Kristen Bry. We got Greg back on the board. And before we head to our good, our bad, and our once again, I am asking you not to sleep on women's sports headlines for today. Just a reminder that it is National Supper Club Day. So we are asking you throughout today's show, what makes a supper club? And what is your favorite supper club? Do we have a text?
We do have a text from the 310. Supper clubs have big bars that are packed with people drinking and waiting for their tables. Favorite supper club drinks is, of course, an old-fashioned relish tray and or salad bar was always a big feature. And this texter not only sent us this text, but also the map coordinates, the literal map coordinates, to a place called the Pinewood Supper Club, located in Marathon County.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
So thank you, 310.
Thank you. Thank you, 310. You know, I was in that same interview, the history of the old-fashioned is tied up, like so many things, in Prohibition.
Yeah.
And the fact that they were trying, you know, like grain alcohol or whatever they could get their hands on. That's why they had to put so much stuff in it. So it's like, we're going to put some sugar in it. We're going to put some bitters in it. We're going to put some fruit in it, like anything to make this drinkable. And then it was at the Chicago World Fair where brandy was introduced.
Yeah.
And the Germans, the Wisconsin Germans were like, this is good.
I'm going to give me some of this.
I'm going to take some of this.
Did I tell you, when I went to Toronto, we went to a bar and they had a bourbon old fashioned. And I said to my brother-in-law, I was like, oh, they don't have a brandy old fashioned. He goes, what is that?
What even is that?
And I go, put brandy in an old fashioned. It's like Wisconsin's like the number one consumer of Korbel brandy in the world because of these. And he goes, okay. And then he turns to the bartender. He goes, hey, have you heard of a brandy old fashioned? And the guy goes, no. And my brother-in-law looks at me and goes, see, I go, just because you've never heard of it doesn't mean it's not a thing. It's a huge thing in Wisconsin. Just because we're uncultured swine, apparently.
But it's funny because the other way around when you come to Wisconsin is it's hard to find an old-fashioned made in the way that it's made everywhere else.
Yeah.
The first thing, because like I obviously moved away when I was 17, so when I started actually drinking like an adult and not just taking like...
When you were 21.
Of course.
Yeah.
But drinking like an adult where you like go to a bar and order a cocktail, not like take shots of like Fleischmann's vodka and like chase it with a Gatorade.
That's a number one.
That's
vodka.
Like a college thing. And so I had learned what an old fashioned was outside of Wisconsin. And it is something that is made with bourbon.
Yeah.
And no seltzer water. It's like 2 ounces of bourbon with a muddled cherry and a muddled orange slice with a little bit of simple syrup, 2 dashes of bitters, and that's it. So it's like it's just straight booze.
Yeah.
So the first time I ever came home and was at a supper club with my parents and ordered an old fashioned, I think they got an old fashioned sweet, and I literally spit it out because I was like, "What is this?" Because it tastes very different, especially when you put Sprite on top of brandy. You're like, "This is a diabetic shock in a glass."
You've brought me the cocktail of the unwashed.
And like pressed, sour, sweet. You get someone very confused when you bring them to Wisconsin and they just want a bourbon, basically. All right. Well, let's get to the good. The good headline, I think, for today. Health officials urge reclassification of marijuana as a lower risk drug. So leaders at the Department of Health and Human Services urged the Drug Enforcement Administration, DEA, to ease restrictions on marijuana in a letter viewed by Bloomberg. Weed is currently considered a Schedule I substance under the Controlled Substances Act, putting it in the same category as LSD and heroin. But the letter said it should be changed to a Schedule III substance, like pain medication and testosterone. This would not legalize the drug, as many states have done, but it would bring down some of the barriers to the cannabis industry. The cannabis industry is facing, such as being barred from banks. So stocks in the industry rose on the news. I think this is a good thing.
I think it's a great thing.
It's not a great thing necessarily for the U.S. Open, though, right now.
Why is that? I mean, you mean my favorite time of the year?
I know you're really enjoying right now. But this was a quote from this week. The U.S. Open is opening in New York right now.
Day 3.
Quote, Court 17 definitely smells like Snoop Dogg's living room. So marijuana is legal in New York. The smells of determination and victory aren't the only ones hovering over the U.S. Open this year. Players have complained. Players, not other like attendees. Yeah. Players have complained that one court also reeks of marijuana. The United States Tennis Association investigated the source of the stench and concluded that no one was lighting up in the stands. That means that the most likely explanation for the house party-like odors is that it was wafting over from people smoking in a nearby park.
I think we have a quote from the investigation. It was they said exactly, "No, man, it's cool. This is fine. Just go with it, man. Watch the ball. Be the ball, man. Cool."
Which is, I mean, because even if when something's legal, even if the drug itself is legal in New York, like the entity, the venue, can still say there's no smoking on the premises.
Correct. Yeah.
So I don't think people are actually smoking, like lighting up at the U.S. Open.
Yeah, and the thing is, the first individuals I would think would complain would be the players, because
they're trying to play.
I love tennis so much. I love watching it. I will never play it. You're welcome. I love watching it, but them's are the most uptight groups of people ever. Just like, oh my gosh, my shoelace is not tied right. Ah, they are so complainy. They complain about everything. It's so fun to watch. All right, sorry. Go on.
All right, let's move on to the bad. This is so frustrating.
The bad.
So, as we were talking before about, oh, shouldn't there be accountability for private schools who are receiving public money? Mm. Shouldn't that be, you know, easily publicly available of how they are spending the money? Similar but different, you know, as we embark every week on the latest drama of what's happening with the Wisconsin Supreme Court, whether it's, you know, Wisconsin Watch got a hold of all of their emails back and forth. There's threats of Protasiewicz being impeached and then holding up the process so she would just be in limbo, and so it would slow everything down. But this will not be cheap, this fight. You know, the cost of us to not move towards a more democratic system is looking to be about $2 million right now. Wisconsin taxpayers on the hook for up to $2 million in legal fees to defend GOP-drawn election maps. Taxpayers are on track to cover up to $2 million for outside attorneys hired by GOP legislative leaders to defend election maps approved in 2021 that favor Republicans, state records show. This is from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and Molly Beck this morning. The total cost could grow higher under provisions in three contracts. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahue signed earlier this month. They're limited to $1.8 million over the next year under contracts with law firms Lahosky, Keller Cohn, and Consovoy, McCarthy, and Lawfare. These names.
It's going to be covered by law firm.
Yeah, law firm. Last name, and last name. But I just saw that and it just made me so mad. It's like, oh, so we get to pay for you to continue to squash our voted desire to have better maps.
I saw Dan Schaefer text this journal article, and I saw Molly Beck, and I was like, I just so angry, so mad. Just like, of course.
Well, it's as frustrating as the final tally kept rising for the Gableman investigation.
Yeah.
Right. We've been on the hook, right? Taxpayers have been on the hook for whenever there's these lawsuits that come between typically, you know, the GOP and what has been a lot of the times the governor's, this governor's administration, and they don't pay for that.
No. I mean, in fairness, and when I say fairness, I use that word real loosely. I mean, it is a government action. So, yes, of course, it's going to be paid for by the taxpayers. And I know that realm very well. So it's just frustrating that my taxes are paying for these two yahoos and their group of yahoos. It's very diplomatic of me.
Very diplomatic of you.
Thank you.
So I feel like there's not much more to say behind that. I don't really know there's much that we can do except hope that the lawsuit itself that's going to the Supreme Court doesn't get hung up, and that, knock on wood, there's somehow new maps by 2024.
Mm-hmm.
If that doesn't happen, you should still vote.
Always vote.
You should still vote in 2024.
Always vote.
Because they're still introducing a lot of stuff, and they're still using taxpayer for stuff like this just to keep themselves in power. All right. So this is some cool news. Once again, I'm asking you, please don't sleep on women's sports. So I feel like this has been the year of women's sports finally getting the recognition, not only that they're good, but that there's eyeballs. And with eyeballs comes money. Nebraska, last night, the University of Nebraska, the Cornhuskers, and their fans scored a unique kind of victory, setting a new, not national, but global record for attendance at a women's sports event. The Huskers packed 92,000 people, actually, to be exact, 92,003 people into the school's football stadium to watch its women's team play volleyball, surpassing the world record of 91,648 fans set at a Champions League game in Barcelona in 2022. Nebraska's Memorial Stadium only holds 85,000 spectators for football, which still regularly transforms its state into the third largest city, proudly. But seating was available on the field for this event to help break the record, which also makes sense because a volleyball court is much smaller than a football court, so you can put more people up there. But they played Nebraska's volleyball match against Omaha was last night, and they are the fourth-ranked team. They won in a sweep, and I just think this is really cool. I think this is awesome as far as, like, you get 92,000 people to show up to watch a college women's volleyball game, and you can't tell me that there's not appeal for women's sports. And so I just thought this was incredibly cool, and I'm excited for more women's sports, both professional and also for the NCAA tournament next year, to see if it's as good as this last year was with Caitlin Clark and everybody. But and then my final note, do we have anyone on the phone?
They were talking about the last segment about school vouchers and whatnot. Yeah,
got it. But the last thing, did you see who dropped a new podcast?
It wasn't me, was it?
It was not you. Was not you. Late night hosts Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, Seth Meyers, and John Oliver teamed up and made a podcast to support their striking staff, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, I saw this. I think it's going to be fantastic. It's so fun.
And I do think as we enter next year, I mean, who knows how long this strike is going to last, but how much, I've heard this point made a couple different times. One, sometimes by listeners of this, the civic media, but also in general, like, what would SNL have done with last week's debate? And I was like, God, that's a good question. Like, the going into this next year's election cycle with no comedy writers. So there's no SNL sketches, there's no late night hosts, like, making light of things. And so it's nice to see these guys. I don't know what the podcast will be about, if they will even cover politics at all. But as far as, like, it's a reminder of what we are missing, so as long as this strike keeps persisting, as far as letting comedians kind of guide the way as far as our understanding of the things that are happening. So check it out. It's called Strike Force 5. When we come back, 3 headlines and a lie. We will see how Greg Bach does. And if you have more thoughts on what makes a supper club, we want to hear from you, or a supper club recommendation. Stay tuned. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
The key slides into the ignition. The engine rumbles to life. My hand grips the throttle. New gear for my ride. The road, my invitation. The sound, the smell, the exhilaration. I am one with the bike. And the car in front of me suddenly turns in my lane. Motorcycles are everywhere, but too often go unnoticed. Please, always look twice, be alert, and share the road with motorcycles at all times. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Transportation.
Kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum.
So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Jerry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
With weather, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, nothing but sunshine, 79. Tonight, mostly clear, lows around 57. And a big warm-up starts tomorrow. We'll see a high near 87 degrees. For Saturday, 91, 99, and hot for your Sunday. Highs near 98 on Labor Day with nothing but sunshine.
It's 67 right now.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
To As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. Greg Bach is on the board. And reminder, we were just talking about Nebraska's global record they just set for the highest attended women's sports event ever last night with 92,003 people.
Damn.
But from the 312 in the WAUK text line said, hey, and Wisconsin is ranked number one. Be sure to ask JR about Wisconsin volleyball next time he's on. And so I will ask JR Radcliffe. Oh, actually, we have Paul Noonan on today. I wonder if he has, he does a lot of baseball and football, but he also just does sports in general. So I'll ask him as far as if he has any insights on college women's volleyball as we get started with that season this year. But we are also taking your thoughts on what makes a supper club because it is National Supper Club Day. And what your favorite supper club is. But right now, Greg, are you ready? You got out of it last week.
Why?
Because I think we ran out of time. I think we whatever topic we were doing last Thursday took us to the end of the hour, and we never came back to it.
Hey, then, Kristen, what's going on with you right now? I mean, just how you how's the baby going thing?
That baby thing.
Yeah, I heard you're pregnant.
You really don't want to say, what are you going to do tomorrow when you have to play against Pat Kreitlow in the headline quiz?
I'll lose.
Didn't you win last time? No.
No, I lost.
Okay, to William Walter?
I lost in the last second. He got me with, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
All right.
Let's do this. Let's do this. I'm ready.
Three headlines and a lie. We're doing three headlines that are real. One is fake. Greg has to guess the fake one. And he gets, the whippings will continue until you get them right.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Number one, I got gobbled up by a whale. It was amazing.
All right.
Number two, oh my God, live worm found in Australian woman's brain in world first discovery.
Okay.
Number three. NYC tourists seeking authentic experience take late-night rat tours.
Okay.
Number four, Adam Sandler will let you punch him to raise money for Bob Barker's animal rights organization.
God. Okay, the first one was gobbled up by a whale, and it was amazing.
I got gobbled up by a whale. It was amazing.
The second one is...
Oh, my God. Live worm found in Australian woman's brain in world first discovery.
I'm going with that one.
That one's fake?
Yeah.
Sorry to say, that one's real.
God.
It sounds like a horror movie. I actually read about this earlier this week. Woman complained of forgetfulness and depression before doctors pulled out an 8-centimeter roundworm normally found in pythons out of her brain. Oh, it just gives me like.
Was the first thing that happened like she just like remembered her passcodes and she was like, "I'm so happy."
I don't know, but this was in Australia, which of course is in Australia, like the land of critters.
Oh my God!
But
I feel great now. Feel great.
The neurosurgeon had pulled an 8-centimeter long parasitic roundworm from her patient, prompting her to call other hospital colleagues for advice on what to do next. Can you imagine? Just like, well, I found this. What do I do with it? How did it get there?
Burn it.
And I honestly, I haven't read the whole thing to see like how it got there. But I think, have you ever seen some of those like TikTok videos where if you pour a little bit of like, people are like, oh, there's something in my ear, and they pour like hydrogen peroxide and it like a spider crawls out.
Come on. What are you doing?
Sorry. Am I really freaking you out?
Come on.
All right. Let's move on. What's your second guess of what's fake?
This whole reality, you sicko. I would go Adam Sandler punching him in the face.
That is correct.
Okay. I wanted it to be real, but then I'm like, that's pretty violent even for Adam Sandler.
Especially for strangers to just punch him in the face.
Yeah, right.
I wouldn't be surprised if he's doing something.
Yeah, I mean,
to raise money for Bob Barker's animal rights organization, RIP.
Yeah.
But that is the fake one. But that means that people are indeed taking late night rat tours.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
What? Oh.
That doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, that's kitschy. It's New York. It's right up there with a Sex and the City tour.
They also have a rat czar.
Yeah, you know,
who makes like six figures.
I think it's isn't it like the brother of the mayor or something? Or
I think it's a woman, because I heard her get interviewed on a different podcast.
Okay.
But yeah, so tourists are flocking to the Big Apple to check out its exploding rat population, and tour guides are tailoring excursions to introduce them to the city's most beady-eyed natives.
You know, we're just asking for something. Like, I don't know. I have no idea what it is, but it's like between climate change and being interested in this, being like, we went to New York and saw rats and Hamilton.
But it's like, are there not rats other places? If it's a gaggle of geese, is this a swarm of rats?
Well, I think for one thing, it's just because it's New York.
And you're just like, we're here. Let's see what it's like. Let's do as the New Yorkers do and see some rats
in
the subway.
They're called, let's see here, a mischief of rats.
That's awesome.
They're called a mischief of rats.
How many rats does it take to be a mischief?
4. I don't know. I mean, we got a text saying from the 312 saying, Greg, it's obvious Kristen was never traumatized by Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Is there a worm in the brain?
Yeah, they pull. Yeah, same idea. It's like, but that's also like the 80s. So it's like, you can tell it's like not a real face.
Is that an actual worm like this doctor found?
Well, yeah.
And then finally, indeed, someone did get gobbled up by a whale.
Jonah.
This is from Slate magazine, published this week, and it's my friend, this is like a long narrative story instead of just a headline, but it sounds like, what's it like, people tell us, what's it like to have experiences many of us have not even imagined. In this entry, we spoke to physical therapist Julie McSorley, 58, who is one of the few people on planet Earth outside of storybooks and the Bible who have been inside a humpback whale's mouth and lived to tell the tale. It happened in November 2020 while she was kayaking with her friend Liz Cottrell in California's San Luis Obispo Bay.
All right.
There you go.
I like how they said storybooks and the Bible.
Because they're different.
Yeah, totally. They're so different.
All right. Well, when we come back, Dr. Kristen Lierley will be here for a public service announcement. If you have questions for the doctor, 844-967-2789, we will take those. And then at the bottom of the next hour, Paul Noonan will be here for a sports update on the Brewers and why he is recklessly optimistic about the Packers this season. And at the end of next hour, we're going to talk about what we won. What we were voted as from Milwaukee Magazine.
Big surprise coming, folks.
Big surprise. All right, stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin. We'll be back after the top of the hour news. Tell me sweet little lies. Tell me lies. Tell me lies. Oh, no, no, you can't disguise.
Tell me lies. Tell me sweet little lies. Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change.
Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Pursuing the truth wherever it may lead. The Todd Alba Show, weekday afternoons from 1 till 3. Join the conversation. Get involved. The Todd Alba Show on your local civic media radio station and on the app. This is 93.5 The Tap. 93.5 The Tap. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.